You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, you know it's going to be a crazy night when Kanye West is running for president and Leo Terrell is voting for Trump. Talk about a topsy-turvy world.
All right. Well, you started this. So what is going on with that? So, well, I know Kanye West just this past week said that he's going to run for president of the United States, right?
Right. And I think he's going to run. In 2020,
so like now.
How would that be happening?
Well, he's going to run as an independent, and I think he can do it.
I don't know.
Because there is no independent that has been running.
Okay. And do you know why he's going to run? He was a full-on Trump supporter, but he said he doesn't support Trump anymore, President Trump, because he was in hiding during the riots or whatever.
Oh, he was in the bunker.
Trump
was in the bunker.
He was hiding in the bunker. But people need to understand, the president does not have a choice about that. The Secret Service makes that decision, and they have the right, and they tell the president, you're going, period.
So what you're saying, Linda, is that the Secret Service trumps Trump.
That's right. In that situation, they do.
And forget all the other stuff that Kanye West said that was good about the president and why he was voting for him, because he doesn't understand anything about the presidency and how the Secret Service trumps the president of the United States. Now he's running for office.
And is that, well, isn't that an intelligent decision and reason to run for president?
Well, I think it's great because I hope, and you know what? I hope he gets a couple of million votes, okay? Because they're not going to be conservative votes. They're going to be people that would be voting for Biden.
Well, this is
so
true.
Please, Kanye,
maybe
we should donate. Oh, but so Leo Terrell.
I think he's got enough money to run his own campaign.
Yeah, but I want to talk about Leo Terrell.
Maybe
our listeners don't know who the heck Leo Terrell is. Right?
Well, who is Leo Terrell?
He's a very famous liberal attorney, civil rights attorney. Okay? So I'm like flabbergasted.
I mean, very, very liberal. And I am flabbergasted as well, but I'm very, very pleased because here's somebody who has seen the light. I mean, he's seeing is that the Democrats are being hijacked by the progressives.
Oh, and there is no doubt about it. I'm sorry, I ran over you there, but I absolutely get that he gets it. And it was interesting. It's so funny that you brought this up because, like, it was about a week ago or something, and I'm watching Fox News and they're interviewing, and I'm kind of drinking coffee in the morning. You know, you would be watching TV and I'm drinking the coffee. And I kind of
was when you spit it out all over the bed.
Exactly right, because I wasn't paying attention to the screen. But I was just drinking coffee and I had my eyes closed and I'm listening to to a man talk. And I said to myself, this really sounds like Leo Terrell. And I opened my eyes and saw it was Leo Terrell. And that's when I spit my coffee all over the bed.
I'm kind of more interested that you're drinking coffee with your eyes closed.
I'm savoring the flavor.
Oh, okay.
El sabor.
I see.
So, but that's... those are, stay tuned because more to come.
Things change by the moment these days.
Oh, God. So listen, I want to talk with you about the future of policing and what is that model going to look like. And let me tell you why I'm bringing this up. This afternoon, I had the honor of addressing various police instructors from about 30 different agencies. I'm not going to mention the state. And we were talking about policing and training and defunding and the use of force and new policing and, you know, what's that model going to look at like? And I can't tell you how depressing that seminar was, or, you know, it wasn't really a seminar. It was me talking to them. They were asking for advice, and it was like give and take. So it isn't just Dr. Ron talking. I was honored to be one of the speakers. But so what's kind of cool about Zoom that I didn't know about is that you can actually ask a question and take an immediate poll. You can actually vote on your screen and you get an immediate poll. So the guy that was running the seminar, he did a poll and he asked the officers, I didn't vote, right, because it's not my thing, but he asked the officers, who are all training officers, by the way, he said, whose department is defunding? Whose department? How many departments out there are defunding? 32% of the 30 agencies that were there. So in other words, almost a third.
So like 11 agencies out of 30 or so.
Right. And they said, we're defunding. We've already been defunded. And then 22% said, we think we are going to be defunded. We're not sure yet, but the word is that we probably will be defunded. And 45% said, no, we're not being defunded. But so I wanted to just kind of have a discussion with all this defunding that's going on that apparently, you know, as I wrote about in my Black Lives Matter and the War on Police book, this is definitely one of the main objectives of the Black Lives Matter movement is to defund and ultimately dissolve. So I just thought maybe we could have a little conversation on what would that look like?
Well, I think it's a very scary picture in my mind. And here's what it would look like. It would look like what's happening in New York and Chicago on steroids. The shootings and the crime in New York is up not 100%, but over 300%. Over 300%.
I think it's something like 352%, as a matter of fact.
Just think about that is a staggering figure. Think about the all of the things that you've seen in recent weeks with the CHOP districts and the autonomous zones and the police being ambushed and shot and children. We've had 16 children shot.
Just in a week.
And these are people that are just indiscriminately firing at something and missing, or, you know, it's not that the children were even intentionally shot. They were just shot in the process of somebody committing a different crime.
Of shooting,
right. And, you know, what we have also in this country to complicate all of that is we have very weak leaders in a lot of cities and counties and states right now. We have a lot of weak leaders who cannot come up to the plate and do the right thing.
Well, what's happening, and I've got a couple of great examples I want to talk to you about, but what is happening is that the police, the morale is so bad that they're leaving. They're leaving the game. And so Law and Order magazine, I believe it was Law and Order, reached out and did a poll of 10,000 officers, and I think probably subscribers to their magazine. And 93% of the 10,000 said that they would not recommend law enforcement as a career to anybody.
I know, and it's amazing. Just really sad.
Amazing.
But you know what, Ron? The officers wouldn't be leaving, and they would not have those feelings if they felt supported by their city, by their council people, by the people,
by the public,
and because they're not supported, and it's not the Black Lives Matter guys. They don't expect their support.
Correct.
Okay. But they do expect the everyday public support, and they do expect the support of the people that are, say, in the city councils and the people that are making the rules about the police.
Well,
department.
The people that sign the paychecks and make the decisions. But you know, I want to say something. You're absolutely correct when they say, "Hey, look, we're never going to get the support of the Black Lives Matter movement or Antifa or you know people like that." But still, the vast majority of the people in the United States do support their police. The problem is, Linda, is that they're not vocal and that they're scared.
You're absolutely okay? Right.
And I think it's the silent majority that was, that term was first came about in the Nixon administration. And by the way, this is interesting because it was the silent majority that voted Richard Nixon into office when he was not supposed to be voted into office. So maybe we will see something coming up with regards to the president.
It was the silent majority that voted Trump into office.
No, that's correct. But I don't want to get into that politics. I want to talk about the future of police. But in this line of what we're talking about, 809 NYPD officers put in for retirement during just this past month. And so many, hundreds and hundreds more are putting in for retirement, that so many are putting in for retirement that it has backlogged the city in processing retirements. So now they're only processing between 35 and 50 a day, and you got to come in for an appointment, but they are leaving by now the hundreds.
Yes.
And what they're saying, I heard
some. If not thousands.
Oh, well, I think you're going to get thousands. I'll tell you what, I would suggest by the end of this year, no matter who is elected, okay, no matter who, by the end of this year, I bet you will see at least 3,000 retirements from the New York City Police Department.
Isn't it curious that our politicians, our legislators think that, let's take a city like New York City or Los Angeles, and these people who are defunding police, who are taking their money away, and the police, by the way, are wondering what's next. Is it my pension? Are they going to reduce my pay?
I think you're going to see that. I really do. I think you're going to see benefits and pensions being reduced, and you're already seeing, Linda, that they are not paying them for overtime. That's huge.
What are they thinking is going to happen in their cities? You take a city of, I don't know how many millions of people are in New York.
Oh, my God. There's like 25 million people.
And you reduce the number of officers. What do you think is going to happen in that city? And how does it make sense to you to say, well, let's just defund this by 20%, 25%, whatever they're defunding it by? What is your mindset that makes you say we need less officers so that in your area there are fewer people to patrol and help people and take calls? How rational is that decision? It makes no sense.
Well, here's what they've done. They've already reduced the NYPD budget by 15%, which is something like $1.3 million, something like that.
Billion, isn't it?
I'm sorry, billion. Yeah. Right. Of course it is. It's billion. So that's about 15% of their budget. And they've already, the administration there has already told them, you just can't do that.
And they got rid of some of the certain crime units.
Oh my God.
Well,
one of the biggest things that they did wrong, which has really caused the crime rate to go up, is really the backbone of proactive police work is the anti-crime units.
Right.
So they got rid of the anti-crime units. They got rid of the gang units. And, you know, the majority of the shootings that happen in New York, just like they happen in Chicago and other big cities, are gang and drug related. So they've got rid of the two most proactive and successful policing units in the city. And by the way, when I said, you know, 23, 25 million, it's not only the city of New York, but the region around the city of New York City. I mean, but there are millions of people in New York. And so now, just like these officers in my seminar today said, the first thing, and you know this, the first thing that gets hit in any budget crunch, in any reduction in budgets is training. That's the first thing. But where does recruitment come from? It comes from the training budget. So if you've reduced the training budget, then you've automatically reduced recruitment. Great example, and I think you brought this up. We were talking yesterday. Didn't you tell me that they had plans for a big academy for NYPD?
Yes.
And they canceled it?
Yes, and it was over 1,000 students.
Recruits.
Right.
Yeah. So those guys and gals, they're all gone.
They're gone.
And then who is going to come in now? So those are people that went through the background, probably started the application process at least 6 months ago. Well, look at what has happened in 6 months. So the COVID has happened in 6 months, and in the last couple of months, we've had George Floyd, we've had all these riots and all this insurrection and all this anti-police sentiment and defunding and dissolving and this and that. And so the question is, who's going to step up to the plate to be the new police officer in our future? What does that person look like? And so, you know, as a guy that's trained police officers and, you know, my whole career, and I was a police academy director, I'm pretty scared about that.
I am too.
Because they're going to replace the lack of police. If you're listening to some of that political rhetoric out there, with mental health professionals and de-escalators and community activists, and I've got to tell you, some of that will work, but the vast majority of that will not work.
It will not work, because and it never not, has worked.
That's right. And you know why? Because they don't have the mentality. They don't have the, and I'm not being condescending here. I'm just, this is the way it is. They don't have the mindset. They don't, which is the mentality. They don't have the mindset. They don't have the chops. They don't have the job skills. And they don't have the life experience. Even though they think they do, they really don't. We're talking about street here, okay? Not books, you know, not the lab. This isn't Psych 101. This is ugly. These are people under the influence. These are crazy people. These are armed people. These people are talk to you 1 second and turn on you and slit your throat the next. And these are the people that they want to respond to those types of calls, with those crazy people calls. And, you know, they want the police to not respond.
You look at any of our social agencies right now. Look at social services, who goes out and handles child abuse cases. How many times do they give those kids or leave them in a home where they're being abused, yep, and give them, yep, another chance, another, yep, chance as those, until that child is killed? That we cannot do this. And what I want to see from the police, and I think what most people want to see, Ron, is cops that come out and handle the problem. They take care of it. Of course, I'm not saying, you know, that they want people to be abusive, so let's not go there. I'm saying they want the police to be able to take care of the problem.
But you know what? That part of the community is not vocal enough. Right, even though they've been hurt so often and they've been victimized so often, they're not speaking up because they're scared. They're scared of the counterculture. But let me say two other things really quick. The cops are not going to engage, because they've already learned that when they engage, they get in trouble and they get major pushback. So that's number one. Number two, they don't want to engage also because of COVID. So COVID has already, as a pandemic, distanced the police from the public. So we already have that pandemic distancing. Now we have political distancing, and the cops don't want to show up. Did you see just this past weekend that 300 cops in one weekend did not show up for work at LAPD?
Yes.
They called in sick. I'm telling you, they're not sick, all right?
Well, they're sick of what's going on.
There you go.
I don't blame them.
There you go.
Because LA hasn't supported them for a very long time.
Let's have a cup of coffee and continue this conversation, because I know you and I have got a lot to talk about.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we celebrate our 4-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. We are a grassroots movement of patriots, blogs, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You a question, and let me preface it. So we're talking about that people, good people, don't complain about this. They don't stand up and they don't say, hey, we want our cops to have power. Why don't they? I think the media, and I think that people have tried to make them feel guilty for feeling like they should have strong police officers. The whole false narrative about the brutality of police and how many shootings they do, I mean, that can be knocked down so easily by any article written, and you've written many great articles about the falseness of those claims.
Well, you know, I wrote about it in my Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter and War on Police book. The whole book is not opinionated. The whole book is forensic and full of vetted facts. And every once in a while, those facts come out, but not nearly enough.
Well, and that book is selling like crazy right now because people now, you're seeing that people are hungry for this information. And that is that silent majority. But here's my question. Since we need the silent majority to stand up now, since we need them to speak up now, since we need them to not be afraid and to say what they think and say what they want in their cities, how do we get there?
Well, boy, it's really tough because, you know, for several reasons. And let me just say something that you said in our first segment, and that is weak leadership. Okay, so there's weak leadership.
Yes.
So, I mean, and even here in Texas, which surprises the bejesus out of me. So just this week, after riots in Fort Worth, Texas, one of many cities, the Fort Worth Police Chief, Edward Krause, announced in a letter and in a public statement that they were going to drop charges on every single rioter that they arrested in the city of Fort Worth during this civil unrest insurrection. Every single one. So if you are the silent majority, tell me that's not demoralizing. Tell me you're a business owner and they smashed your windows or they smashed your car or they yanked you out of a car and they beat you.
Or they burned your business down.
Yeah, exactly. All right. All of these different things. And now, and the destruction of police cars and you know, all of that stuff, none of these people that were arrested are going to get penalized. None of these people are going to be prosecuted because this week, Chief of Police Edward Krause has decided unilaterally that they're going to drop the charges. How would you feel if you were a police officer that got injured affecting an arrest of one of those protesters? So it's completely demoralizing. Let me say another thing about demoralization. The city of Palo Alto, California, which is where Stanford University is in the San Francisco Bay Area, The city council and the mayor commissioned with taxpayer funded money a giant Black Lives Matter mural painted in the street. It's 274 feet long. And in this mural that goes between in the street that separates City Hall from the police department, facing the police department, part of that mural is a inner mural of Assata Shakur, who, if people don't know who Assata Shakur is, she was a Black Liberation Army because the Black Panther Party that she belonged to wasn't extreme and violent enough. So she joins the Black Liberation Army and then assassinates a state trooper in New Jersey back in the mid-70s. As a matter of fact, they tried to make a car stop on her and two other radical communist revolutionaries. There was a gunfight. One of the officers gun jammed, and she walked up to the officer and put four bullets in this guy's head. All right? She's convicted of first-degree murder. She goes to prison. She escapes, and she's been in Cuba hiding out. Well, not actually hiding out. She's out there in public, and she is a revolutionary hero, and they painted that facing the police department. And the chief of police and his command staff didn't do a damn thing. And the police there are so demoralized, and they are leaving in droves.
And that was Palo Alto.
And those are the police. So what do you expect the silent majority to do?
Well, I would expect the people in Palo Alto to complain vehemently, over spending tax dollars on that. But it's Palo Alto.
I know. And that, you have to look at that.
That's your problem, is that these are the people that are willing to live with all the poop in the streets, as they are in San Francisco, rather than speak up for themselves.
Well, you know, let me just say one more. So did you hear about the two people, the man and the woman in Martinez, California, which is in, again, the San Francisco Bay Area, outside of San Francisco, right? On the other side of the bay, east side of the bay. And they put a Black Lives Matter revolutionary mural on the street again. And this man and woman went out there and started painting over the mural, and they were arrested, and now they're being charged not only with vandalism, but conspiracy to commit a hate crime, which is a felony, and it's a prison sentence.
And I thought committing a hate crime needed to be against a person.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what.
Instead of a painting on a wall.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And this is why the silent majority doesn't speak up, because they don't want to be sued. They don't want charges brought against them. They don't want to be, you know,
vilified. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Every single thing that can happen. And that exactly is why the silent majority doesn't speak up, because they have been so intimidated, and because they are allowed to be intimidated because of our weak leadership and the impotent law enforcement, due to the weak leadership taking away all of the tools that law enforcement had in order to keep the rule of law in America.
I absolutely agree. But you know, for those people that listen to you and me, and people like you and me, you know, people just in their homes, just like you and me, having a coffee
conversation. There is nobody like you and me.
You know what I'm saying? Having a coffee conversation and throwing their shoes at the TV like you and me do. These people have to understand that you don't necessarily have to be vocal, but you do have to speak with your vote. You have to speak with your vote. And that means you have to be known. You have to write letters to the city council, write letters to the mayor. You need to show up at these city council meetings. You do have to express your thoughts. But more importantly, you should never forget and never forgive the weak leaders that have done what is happening to us in the United States today. And those people need to be voted out of office. And the only people that can do it is this silent majority.
And you know what? I read a kind of scary statistic that over 90% of incumbents get reelected just because they're incumbents. And we need to rethink that. The other thing that we really need to rethink, and I honestly don't remember, even though it happened during my time, I don't remember how it came to be exactly that police chiefs and mayors were no longer autonomous from each other, and they worked together, and they were co-equal type branches within a city. And then it became that the police were under the mayor.
Yeah, that changed a long time ago.
I know it was a long time ago, but I was still around when it changed. But under so now they serve at the pleasure of the mayors
The city manager, depending on what kind of government they have.
And that is a huge problem. I just see that things started going bad when we did that. And when a police chief has to worry about his job with a mayor and cannot stand his ground for his men, we lost a tremendous amount of leverage. We lost a tremendous amount of respect from the officers for their police chiefs. You know, I mean, I remember the police chiefs in Los Angeles, like Gates and Davis, and people that really just stood up. You had some in New York as well. Really stood up for their officers. But once this paradigm changed, and then you get these civilian oversight committees of people that literally know nothing about law enforcement. In fact, not only do they know nothing, but they're on the kind of whole other side of the page where they don't even like law enforcement.
Well, they've got an axe to grind. Some of them do. Some of them, they're, you know, I worked with one. I was a consultant for the city of Riverside, California. And so I was their independent investigator. And my job, and I worked out of the mayor's office for 4 years. And my job was to not only reinvestigate everything, in other words, take a look at everything that was being done. And I did officer-involved shootings and in-custody deaths. And so I would look at the investigation that the police department did. I'd look at the investigation that the district attorney's office did. I did my parallel investigation, and I would report back. And the mayor brought me in for transparency. It was a great idea. I enjoyed the job. But my job was also to educate those people in the police review commission who, like you said, really needed an education in law enforcement. And I'm not a believer that that model works, because I've just seen too many people with axes to grind against law enforcement.
Well, and we've talked about it, Ron. We talked about the guys in Chicago.
And they never spend enough time training them. They never do.
Some of them can't be.
Exactly.
I mean, the guys in Chicago who are taking advantage of that position and trying to get special favors because they're in that position, and think that because they're in that position, they're above the law.
Right.
No, this is not working. I think that we need to re-separate those departments and give the police force back their autonomy so that they are not serving at the pleasure of the mayor.
It's never going to happen.
It should be a vote, and it should just not be at the pleasure of the mayor. That's where I think a lot of things went wrong. But I agree with you that it has to be that the silent majority has to speak with their votes. If they're not going to speak any other way, and I don't know honestly how else they could speak, because that was why I asked the question. I'm thinking about how do they do this? And really the vote is...
That's the only thing.
Yeah.
The only power that the citizens have is the power of the voting booth. And what happens, and it's such an interesting dynamic, it's an unfortunate one, and you and I beat our heads against the wall all the time on this, is that once politicians get into office, like you said, 90% of them get voted in every single time because people are ignorant and they forget. And so the politicians aren't scared of the public, and they believe that the public works for them and not the other way around.
Yes.
But, you know, I just want to spend a couple of minutes and talk about, when we talk about the future of policing, which is, you know, how this whole conversation began, is that what kind of officers are we going to have in our departments in the future? All right, because, you know, 93% of officers that are working today would not encourage someone to join law enforcement, have that as a career. The next thing is they're dumbing down all the training, and they are they're defunding the training, and so because nobody, and I've seen it before. If it's hard for you to recruit officers, then you have to keep lowering the standards. So the first thing you do is you lower the educational standards. The next thing you do is you start lowering the drug standards and the crime standards. In other words, what I mean is, you know, before it was like, have you smoked marijuana before? Now it's like, we'll let you on if you haven't taken heroin in 2 years, or use cocaine or methamphetamine.
No, that can't happen.
I'm telling you, it's happened already. It's happened already. And so, and then, you know, obviously the psych, they have to take a psych. And so what do you think is going to happen when nobody is applying for law enforcement jobs, the funding is way down, and yet because people are retiring, the attrition, what kind of cop do you think you're going to have?
I'll tell you what kind of cops you're going to get.
I want to hear it.
First of all, you're going to get cops that are walked all over by the people and by the politicians. They're not going to be able to do anything. They're going to be glorified social workers. Secondly, you're going to get cops then that, because they don't have any backing, because they're not strong, you're going to go back to the old days where cops are on the take.
Oh, thank you. I perceive this.
I perceive, and I've written about this, I perceive you're going to see for the first time in decades and decades, third world policing. Like you would go to Mexico, like you would go to Mexico, or you would go to Colombia, you know, you'd go to Eastern Europe, someplace like that. You would go to the Caribbean, all right? Or you would go to Africa, South America, where cops are on the take, where you have more violent cops, because you have less educated cops, less life experienced cops. Because you've reduced the standards, you're probably going to have cops with criminal histories and drug histories. Besides that, no life experience, no real job skills, no money to really train them. You're going to have shorter police academies. You're going to have everything dumbed down, and you are going to have a horrific police department, something that people can't even imagine that you are going to have. And it scares the bejesus out of me. They are complaining about excessive force now. How about a person with no education, no job skills, more of a corrupt officer? Do you think that they're more likely to go to their gun or not go to their gun when they get scared? You tell me.
Well, the whole scenario is very scary to me. I would like to go in the complete opposite direction. I think that we need to go back to stronger chiefs, stronger mayors, stronger. I think that we have strong officers. The officers that we have are good officers, but they're not being allowed to be good officers is the problem. And they've made them afraid to be a good officer because they sue them for everything or they discipline them for everything. So I would like to see it go back to them being much stronger and taking care of the problems, just like they did in New York when Giuliani was mayor there. And we took care of it. We had the broken windows policing. They took
stop
care of
frisk,
small problems before right. they became big problems.
I don't think you're going to see that because the winds are changing. And I think even if we have major insurrection, you are not going to see us return to normalized policing with strong police leaders, smart officers, enthusiastic, motivated officers. And I'm telling you, I think that it's going to get worse. And it's the scary thing for me, no matter who gets elected president this next time. And I have to tell you, and you know me, I bleed blue and khaki and green. Okay. I bleed that. And been in law enforcement the vast majority of my entire adult life in one form or another. And I would not go into this job. And I've recruited literally thousands of people to become police officers. I would not tell any of them, not a single one, would I say, you know, get out on the street, become an officer, and make a difference. Not a single one.
And I'm going to beg to differ with you. I think the election matters tremendously because President Trump is a rule of law president. And once he is elected and he's then becomes
a lame duck.
A lame duck. I think he's going to do something about it.
But you know what, Linda? Okay. And this is good. We can argue back and forth right now, but, My suggestion is yes, first of all, you're right. Everything that you said is right, but then not right. And I'm going to tell you why. Because the problems that we're having, we're not having problems on a federal level. Okay, these riots, this insurrection, this civil disobedience, these protests, violent or nonviolent, it's at the municipal level. These are all cities. They're not picking on the federal government. You know, when they were picking on the federal government is when we were talking about ICE and Border Patrol and the whole border thing. Notice how that's all gone.
Yeah,
away.
I know.
What happened to that?
It just changes.
What happened
time,
to that?
Isn't it?
Right. But this is all happening on a municipal level. And Trump has nothing to do with that. Those are states and municipal issues.
Yeah.
So I'll just
leave
it. I
still think it'll trickle down.
Okay. Well, I love the fact that you're optimistic. And I'll tell you what, I feel bad that I'm pessimistic, but I also believe that, you know, I see the handwriting on the wall, and I'm a pragmatist. How about our last cup of coffee?
You got it.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DrRonMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
This morning, as you and I were having our morning cup of coffee, we were watching Betsy DeVos on television. I really liked Betsy DeVos. I really had high hopes for her and was really hoping that she would make, you know, a lot of changes in schools and do more with charter schools and private education and things. I think she's had a hard road because the schools are very difficult with the unions to get things done. That being said, the push right now is to get kids back in school come the new school year. Some go in August, some go in September. I think most go in September, but they want kids present at school.
Right, and I think the American Pediatric Association has also said that. Primarily, not only for educational reasons, but for mental health and societal, you know, they have to have that social interaction. But there's a cost, you know, for that. Now that we have the COVID situation,
well, and that is the dilemma. And you know, they're saying that. So this is an interesting discussion because I also thought that it would be good for kids to go back to school. Now we've got COVID really kind of blowing up in a lot of places. And a teacher came on and said, how would you feel to sit in front of 39 kids every single day who, you know, you don't know who they're with, what's happening in their homes, you know, their relatives, their friends, and have to breathe that air with 39 kids every single day.
And, right. And some teachers are older teachers and they might even be in a high risk group. So, you know, and that was the first time that I had heard somebody explain it like that. Right. And, you know, I was feeling for that gal.
Yeah. And I thought, wow, you know, I mean, would I like that? Not much. So again, this is a problem with very difficult solutions. And I understand that so many people do want the kids to go back to school. There's so many reasons for them to go back to school, like the ones that you said. And then, you know, also parents that need to work are having a really hard time because their kids are at home.
Right.
You know, remember, I mean, it was such a hard time when the kids were home during the summers. Imagine now that they've been home March, April, May, June, July, August, you know, 6 months, seven months.
And you're exactly right. And there's other pressures associated with that. And, you know, we just point to our good friends, Bob and Connie, that have been doing homeschooling for the grandkids. I guess they got a couple of grandkids and they're doing homeschooling. And by the way, both of these people are extremely well-educated people. And Bob has told me that it's really a challenge. And these are, I think they've got like third and fourth graders. So, you know, they're saying, and I think both of them are good educators. They're saying, hey, you know, this is challenging when you're dealing with these kids, attention spans and this and that. But the cool thing about Bob and Connie, because they're also common sense conservatives, and they see, like we do, that the problems with the educational system, those kids are getting an education, believe me. They're finding out what real United States history is like and real solid math and, you know, all of these different things and writing and, you know, so they're getting a solid education. There is no doubt in my mind that when those kids go back to school, they're going to be leaps and bounds ahead of every other kid in their class. But
it comes at a price. And that's a psychological price for the parents. And, you know, Linda, you were also talking about the things that we, the unintended consequences of this, like child abuse and some of the things that we would spot as teachers at school. You know, kids come in with bruises or suspicious injuries and things like that. Now those kids are at home and nobody is monitoring those kids.
Right. You don't know if they're eating. You don't know if they're being abused. And I have no doubt that the children that were being abused before are being abused worse now, and nobody knows. And my heart breaks for that situation. And it's such a, I wish I had answers of how to fix it, because I just can't stand to see that happen. But there's a myriad of things to think about when you talk about sending the kids back to school in the middle of a pandemic, because should the kids, you know, get COVID, then they bring it home to their parents, their grandparents. You know, it's, are we going to have another blow up? I just was reading today how one camp where they had students at,
a summer
camp, 83 kids and teachers came down with it. They had to close the whole camp. I mean, multiply that by all the schools in the country. Both ways you look at it is a bad situation, really.
Well, you know, okay, so they've tried the e-learning, right? So the electronic learning.
Yeah.
Using the internet and the teachers using Zoom or Skype or whatever. And the success has been marginal with regards to the education. And, you know, the only other, there's only two other alternatives. Number two is blended learning. And, you know, we do that with our ETC forensic company, where they get some internet training, but then there's practicals, which are physical practicals. And then the other one is just going back to the old, you're in school kind of thing. And you know, what we talked about. And I do realize that those risks most definitely exist.
Yeah, it's like I said, there's no good answer, because if you're going to do the e-learning, I mean, kids, they don't have the self-discipline to be able to sit there and do everything they're supposed to do. So therefore, it takes somebody to monitor them. Who's that? That's going to be the parent.
And they're finding that those kids are not taking the test, by the way. Okay. So they're just not. And so how are you going to certify?
They have to be monitored.
And, well, of course.
And how many parents, honestly, let's talk honestly, not idealistically, how many parents are going to sit there and work through that with their kids?
And then
a lot won't.
And I also have to, you know, bring up this too, because we do have kids that are economically disadvantaged and they don't have computers, right? They don't have them.
Well, so, I don't know if that's because if they don't have them or if the school in this case gives them to them. I don't know.
And I don't think that's a good, necessarily a good thing for us to speculate, because we just don't know.
But I'm saying,
okay, so let's turn that around and make that a problematic question and say, well, what would happen or what is happening to kids that are economically disadvantaged?
That's a good question.
How are they being educated? Right. Is the school providing them with computers? I mean, what is happening? So I absolutely agree. And you know what, just going back to your initial statement and what you said about Betsy DeVos, And I feel really sorry for this woman, because, you know, she volunteered to take this job, and she does have the chops to do it. She's extremely intelligent, has very, very good ideas, but she is getting so much pushback from the unions, and we are never going to get over that. We are always going to have these protective unions. And remember, I shared with you just briefly, when I was a division dean at a community college, and I had some teachers that were just horrible teachers, but they were all tenured, and I was trying to work with them and even evaluate them, which was my job. My job was to critique their training, sit their education, sit in the classroom, see how they were teaching, and they were horrible. And when I tried to move them from their specialized positions back, which was in a police academy, by the way, into just the pre-service training, like the undergraduate program for criminal justice, I wasn't able to do it. And I got so much pushback from the California Teachers Association that I remember I told you, they said, we're going to be here longer than you are.
Yes.
And they were 100% right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that that's another thing that we have kind of gone in the wrong direction on. There may have been a time when having a teachers union was good, and there are so many good teachers. There are not, in my opinion, as many good administrators. I think that's where we have the problem. Not with the teachers, and I'll tell you, a lot of the people that I know that are in teaching don't like the union either. If we could get rid of that union, I think our children would be far better off.
You know, I'm not in favor of unions, but I'm definitely in favor of associations. To me, there's a big difference, okay? And I do believe that teachers need to have advocates. They do need to have an association. They do need to have collective bargaining and, you know, all of these things. I don't think they need a union for that. I think an association, an educated association with a good board and a general counsel that people pay for could do 10 times better than a union could be. But I do believe that it is the fault of the unions that our educational system has been set back to the degree that it has been.
I agree. And by the way, you know, President Trump has said that he wants to not give the schools the federal money if they aren't there teaching live in person.
Yeah, and I don't know about that, you know.
I just don't have a lot of questions here.
Well, we'll deal with it in another coffee conversation in the future.
I think that there's going to be more to be said on that subject. Hey, I want to talk to you about something I got today from my uncle, which was really a surprise. My uncle's in his 90s, and he is my mother's younger brother, and I'll tell you, this guy is, he's totally on the ball, and he has all of his faculties, and he is like, you know, a 30-year-old guy. So he sent this to me today. I want to go over this with you because I thought it was really interesting.
Is it like a letter or something? Or?
Well, it's a, you know, it's just an email that somebody sends, and it's something that I don't know who wrote it. He acknowledges he didn't write it.
Oh, okay.
But there's no author to it. But you know what? It's something to think about. So I'm going to read it to you because it's things that we all talk about and just something to think about. Okay? Ready?
Okay.
It's called A Different Way to Look at Things. I'm not the author, so just to let you know that. He said, it's either a very good plan or an unimaginable set of events that just fell into place with the United States front and center. You tell me. Okay. First, you scare people with a virus and force them to wear masks and place them in quarantine. Count the number of dead every second of every day in every news headline. By the way, 99 8/10 of the people who get the virus recover. About 1 to 2/10 of 1% who get the virus die. Most of all of them have other medical problems. Close businesses, 35 million plus instantly unemployed. Remove entertainment and prohibit recreation. Close parks, gyms, bars, restaurants, sports. No dating, no touching, isolate people. Dehumanize them. Close temples and churches, prohibit worship, create a vacuum, and let depression, anxiety, hopelessness, and desperation set in. Then ignite hatred and civil unrest, creating civil war. Empty the prisons because of the virus and fill the streets with criminals. Send in Antifa to vandalize property as if they are freedom fighters. Undermine the law. Riot, loot, and attack all law enforcement, but tell government to order a stand down. Then defund law enforcement and abolish police. We are all being played by those who want to destroy America. This is how you destroy a nation from within and in very short order. Will it work? I guess that depends on you and me.
That's interesting.
It's something to think about. And I was not expecting this coming from, you know, somebody of his age, but it makes a lot of sense to me. And I think we're all thinking these things in the back of our mind. You know, there's just a whole lot of things that have happened. And I know that you and I were talking a little bit today because I have had this inkling for a very long time that the whole COVID thing is a bioweapon, that it was developed as such, and whether it got out on purpose or accidentally, I don't know. But the more that they find out about it, and we can talk about it another time, really the scarier it gets. And, you know, this is going to be a road for America, Ron.
You know, this, everything that you mentioned in this post, so to speak, whether you believe it or not, is going to, I don't think anybody would disagree, that it is going to test the indomitable spirit of the American people. I don't care what side you're on. I don't care what your politics are. It is what it is. This was not our doing. It's not our fault. We're trying in every way, shape, and form to try to fix this, to try to mitigate this. I think a lot of ignorant and frustrated people are trying to play the blame game here and blame our president of the United States and his administration.
Well, the media is doing that.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
But it's all part and parcel because the media is always complicit in everything. And the people that say they can do a better job have got no behavioral history that they did a better job when we had the other pandemics, when we had H1N1, right? When we had, which was the swine flu, when we had other things, right? What did they do that was so much better than what's going on now? I hope people will read my article on the disunited states and the 12 barometers of trouble that's posted on America Out Loud, because I think that if you track those 12 barometers, you can't help but agree with me that we're in serious difficulty. And my question is, so when's it going to pop?
Well, and I want to tell people where they can find your article. They can find your article on AmericaOutloud.com. And there's a section that has bloggers and it has articles that Dr. Ron Martinelli has written. There's also a lot of articles that Linda Martinelli has
written. Well, I was just going to plug you on that. Okay, so don't forget Linda, because Linda writes more articles than Dr. Ron. But I will hope, because we did talk about policing and some of those issues, that you will go to the America Out Loud bookstore and look for my book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. It's right there on the bookstore. And if you don't see the image of the book, then just type in Dr. Ron Martinelli or Ron Martinelli or Black Lives Matter. And that book is going to pop right up there. You just hit that link and you can order it. And you can also order it on my forensic blog, DRRON for Dr. Ron Martinelli.com.
And if you'd like it personalized, put a little note on there and Dr. Ron will be happy to personalize the book for you.
And we get those books out right away. Our fulfillment unit does a wonderful job. We get those books out the same day that we get the order.
Yes.
And the book has got like a 99% five-star rating, which I'm really happy about. I love to read the reviews on the book. Those of you that are listeners that have bought the book and said such nice things, I certainly appreciate it. And we'll call it a night.